Hey, I think we're ready. I'll call to order the meeting of the MBARD Hearing Board for April 24th, 2025, and ask for a roll call. Siri, please.
Hold on a moment. Checking, checking, checking. Oh.
And I'm assuming green means that's the right thing on the mic.
Okay. Chair Guth. Director Dodge, absent. Director Gerard?
Present.
First alternate Director Chang?
Here.
Second alternate public member Director Corpy? You have quorum.
Okay, great, thank you. So before we get to the next item, I just run some things by us to see if I've got it right, and Reed, correct me if I'm wrong. We have a 5-person authorized board. We only have 3 seated formal members, so we need to pass everything as a majority of the 5, which means unanimous of the 3.
That is correct. You'll need 3 votes today to take any action.
And even though it's a 5-seated board, we only have 3 appointed members. For Brown Act, we can't speak to anyone outside of chambers because that would be a majority of the seating at the meeting. Is that true also?
No, you would just be limited to speaking to less, yes. Wonderful. Less than a quorum. But, oh, I'm sorry. Yes, because you're a 3-member board. Sorry, I was going to the 5.
Yeah.
As a 3-member board, you are limited to speaking to each other outside. Yes.
Which is clear, but inconvenient.
Chair Guth, can you speak right into your microphone?
I can. Okay, so the even though it's April, this typically should have happened in January, but we haven't had a meeting. First thing we do is we have on our agenda is to nominate a chair and a vice chair for the coming year. We haven't had a chance to talk to anybody about it because of the Brown Act rules. I will make it known that I am desirous of maintaining a position of chair, but I'm open to any discussion that we have.
I would so move that Mr. Guth remain the chair for 2025.
I'll second that.
Okay, so why don't we do a roll call vote? Well, thank you for that.
All right. Director Chen.
Yes.
Director Girard.
Yes.
Director Goose. You're approved unanimously as chair.
So the next order of business is vice chair. And once again, having been unable to talk to anybody about it, and with Director Dodge, not, or with Commissioner Dodge not being here, I'm not quite sure who wants to make a motion for a vice chair, but any motion is entertained and welcomed.
Director, do you have a recommendation as to who you'd like as vice chair?
I'm sorry.
Oh, I was asking.
Only because of tenure, I would think of Mr. Dodge, but I hadn't had an opportunity to ask him, and I do know he's been having some attendance concerns this year, so I don't know if that's a temporary thing or ongoing for the year, so I'm not quite sure what to say.
If Mr. Dodge would be willing to serve, I'd be happy to nominate him and make that motion.
I'll second.
Okay, appreciate that. Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Will do. Okay, Chair Guth? Director Girard?
Yes.
Director Chang?
Yes.
Approved unanimously. Dodge, Vice President.
Okay, thank you. So now is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on the agenda. So I will look and ask if there's anybody in the room as a member of the public that would like to make a comment for an item not on the agenda.
And no one online and nothing received.
Okay. With that, I will go on to the next item, which is for us to accept and file the summary of action for the June 3rd, 2024 meeting, which has the order in the package, which I've reviewed. And I'm certainly supportive of a motion to accept. But if there's any discussion on it,
I'll move to accept and file.
Second.
Okay. I'll just ask for a vote. All in favor, say aye, please. Aye.
Yes. Aye.
It's unanimous. Okay. So now the next item is to approve the hearing board schedule. And I did review it. And I don't know if everybody's had an opportunity to review it. I don't remember what page it's on. I may have taken it out, put it somewhere else. Pardon me. And the good news is there's not a meeting in July. I would have missed that meeting had there been one, so that was convenient. Any comments on the schedule?
No comments.
Chair, I've informed Siri that I will be unable to attend the August meeting.
Okay. Well, I'm open to a motion to accept.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, aye, please.
Aye.
Hearing three, that's unanimous. Okay, so next we have public hearing for, and I'm going to ask council, we should, even though it's for the interim and regular, should I treat each of these as individual items and not, and do my best not to hear them together, even though it's on the, I believe it's on the same.
I would take them together as they are fairly closely related.
Okay. So with regard to that, sometimes we get a list of who we're going to put under oath. Do we have that? Ah, here it is. I've got it. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to ask people who are going to testify today to go under oath. And so I'm going to read the oath first and then go to people one at a time for affirmation. So the question is, do you swear or affirm that the testimony you will give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Amy Climo.
I do.
Thank you. Mary Girardo.
I do.
Thank you. Reed Carter. Thank you. Aaron Johnston. Thank you. Okay, we will start.
Mr. Chair, before you begin, I think in full disclosure, I need to tell the applicants, I was formerly county council and counsel to the Air District. I retired in December of 23. I'm no longer an active attorney. And I can assure you that I will be impartial with respect to your matter, but I wanted to make that full disclosure for the record.
Gentlemen.
Sustainability. I have been at the company for 27 years. Granite Rock Company is a privately held company. It is different than Granite Construction Company, which you may have heard of, which is a publicly held company. We've been in business for 125 years. We think we do so because we understand that we have permits and we have community acceptance permits, let's call it. Our ability to interact positively with the community, I think, is key to our longevity. We're here to talk about a facility called the Quail Hollow Quarry. This is a mining facility that provides construction sand materials and has a high has a special type of deposit that affords us the opportunity to provide the raw ingredient for industrial glass sand. We're going to be talking today for a variance for the industrial glass sand part of the facility. The industrial glass sand is a very limited resource in California, and it's a interesting type of process. We supply the raw materials to the kilns, our customers, that are 24/7 large processing facilities that need a continuous supply of material. That's unique that they need a continuous supply of material. Our processing of the sand is limited to washing the sand and then to remove fine particles and then drying the sand. And today we're talking about the drying operation for the facility. Mr. Chair, you may remember I was back here in 2020 asking for a variance. And that was the result of us making upgrades to the dryer for the facility. We wanted to have a more reliable dryer, and we wanted to have a lower emission dryer, and we wanted to have more reliability with hitting our wet gases that are limited on the air permits. So the typical wet gases, CO, NOx, methane, so on and so forth. I'm happy to say that those improvements have worked to date, and the dryer is functioning as we hope it would. However, we are here seeking a variance for the downstream part of that plant. Think of this plant as a human body. You can't have organs functioning separately. They have to be operating in concert. The lungs of the facility, of the dryer, if you will, is controlled by a scrubber. A wet scrubber, and that piece of equipment has emission limits on particulate. Those emission limits on particulate came around last year in the summers sometime, and we did a source test in December with the full expectation, because of the effort and resource we put into the equipment, that we would pass that source test. That source test has a delay in the results, unlike with the wet gases, where you can have a probe in there and you have a pretty good idea if you're in compliance right away. With the particulate, you have to take a filter, it goes to a lab, and it comes back, and you find out what your results were. We were very surprised to have those results come back, and they were over the permitted limits of the new permit for the particulate. We immediately called the air district, notifying them that we were over those limits. We immediately curtailed our production rates so that we wouldn't trigger facility-wide offsets. And we applied for a variance and two variances there. And that's why it's appropriate we're hearing both variances together, because we're actually withdrawing one variance from the application because the limit has been changed since the limit from the summer, and we have higher confidence that we can hit that limit now, and we've had subsequent source testing to verify that. We've also improved some best practices for the facility so that we have this piece of equipment operating more consistently. And Mr. Carter can detail those actions at the right moment. But we've spared no expense, let me assure you, getting this piece of equipment functional and operating to company standards. In addition to what we believe is district standards on that. I'll pause there for questions, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you for that. I do have a question before we get to staff report, and I'll just invite my colleagues, if anytime you have a question, please chime in or let me know. And so I did look at the drawings. This time we don't have drawings on our package, but I have them from before. For those that haven't seen it, the dryer looks sort of like a, correct me if I'm wrong, looks sort of like a cement mixer bin, except it's much bigger, tilted a different way, and sand is conveyed into it with a burner, and it dries as it's almost like a clothes dryer throwing the clothes, but it's the sand. Broad strokes, I believe that's what we're seeing. So when we had that installed with, I believe it was a new burner type 4 years ago, one of my questions is, this limit that you're violating now, were you in before since installation of the new system, or is this the first set of comprehensive test data that you got?
That's a very good question, Mr. Chair. Thank you for it. The limit came in between the installation of the new burner and present day. I believe it was July. Thank you, sir. It was July 2024. The subsequent compliance testing for that was conducted in December 2024.
So this is the first time we've tested for it. Or you've tested for it?
This is the first compliance test for that. Yes, sir.
Okay. So to be clear, however, I noticed in your letter regarding the withdrawal of the application for the other variance that you say that the violation period is December 5th, 2024 through March 6th, 2025. But the order, the draft order, notes that it's January 31st, 2025 through April 1st, 2025. I mean, does anybody
expect? I'll just comment. Yeah, so we can only, at the date of application is when the variance can start. And so they at the end of January is when they, Aaron said, they notified us that they failed that source test, but that time period between December and January would be a violation because they had failed that source test. They just didn't get the test results back till the end of January, and then they immediately turned in the variance application. So we can't start the order until that day that we get the application.
So the date of the...
Yes, that's...
And then, as I understand it, the particulate limit was modified with a new permit, and therefore you don't need the other variance, and that's why you're withdrawing that application.
Is that
correct? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think we're ready to hear from staff, please.
My name is Mary Girardo, and I'll be providing the staff report today. Granite Rock provided you a thorough description of their sand processing operation. Again, I just want to emphasize that the rotary sand dryer is the highest point source for PM from the entire operation. So that includes the screens, the conveyors, and the truck loadouts. And that's why this is at the core of their variance today. So the sand is dried through the use of natural gas combustion, and natural gas combustion is a source of oxides of nitrogen and carbon monoxide, and to a lesser extent, oxides of sulfur, particulate matter, which we refer to as PM, and volatile organic compounds. The system is controlled through the use of a low NOx burner, which MBARD has deemed to be best available control technology for the combustion side of it. The drying of the sand in itself is the second and more significant source of the PM emissions. And it is controlled through the use of a wet scrubber. The wet scrubber is also deemed to be best available control technology for this type of unit. The way the wet scrubber works is the exhaust from the rotary dryer is processed through an enclosed vessel, which is equipped with spray nozzles. The gas enters at the bottom of the vessel, and as it travels up, it passes through the water sprays. The particulate is collected when it makes impact with the water droplet. And as stated on December 5th, as required by their permit, Granite Rock conducted their annual source test. The limits demonstrated that the PM exceeded the 0.06 grains per dry standard cubic feet of condition six. Now, in addition to condition six, there's condition three, which limits the process to 640 tons per day. Those two conditions combined ensured that the facility would stay below 150 pounds per day, which is the offsetting threshold in our Rule 207. That's our review of new and modified sources, also referred to as NSR. So our focus was to determine if they needed to provide offsets for their facility-wide emissions. So the two sources of PM at the site are the sand plant, which includes the rotary dryer, and a portable screening plant. So adding the emissions from those two plants using the December 2024 data, the facility did exceed 150 pounds per day. That's why they submitted the application, and they agreed to limit the operation to keep the facility-wide emissions below 150 pounds per day based upon the following two scenarios. Production rate for the rotary sand dryer will be limited to 250 tons per day when the portable screening plant is not operating, and 235 tons per day when they are operating the portable screening plant. After further discussions with Granite Rock, MBARD recommends two additional conditions, and they are: on the day the wet scrubber manufacturer is on site, the production rate for the rotary sand dryer will be limited to 400 tons per day, and the portable screening plant shall not be operated. And on the day of the source test, the production rate for the rotary sand dryer will be limited to 600 tons per day, and again, the portable screening plant shall not be operated. This third condition is recommended so that Granite Rock can operate for the duration that the manufacturer of the wet scrubber is on site to assess the unit and to make any repairs. The fourth condition would allow Granite Rock to process additional production so that they can complete a valid source test. EPA requires that a valid source test include three continuous one-hour runs, and that the testing contractor has to recalibrate their instruments before each test run. And the recalibration process can take up to an hour. So on the day of the source test, and they have to operate at least 55 tons per hour, they would exceed the 250 ton per day limit. MBARD has received updated information since the postponed March meeting. On February 26th, the wet scrubber manufacturer was on site. He made his assessment and made repairs. On March 6th, Granite Rock tested the unit, and we received the final report on March 23rd. The test results demonstrated that the particulate matter concentration was lower at 0.10 grains per dry standard cubic feet, and that is three times less than the test that occurred in December. Now, as a separate action, in November of 2024, Granite Rock had already submitted an application to us requesting that they reduce their production rate from 640 tons per day to 400 tons per day and allow for an increase of 0.06 grains per dry standard cubic feet to 0.15. Using the current limit of 640 with the new test data in March, The facility still has the potential to exceed 150 pounds per day. But using their two requested data points, 400 tons per day, 0.15 drains for dry standard cubic feet, the operation did not have the potential to exceed 150 pounds per day. Now, since the source test did demonstrate compliance at 0.1, district staff issued a revised and updated permit on April 1st of 2025. Subsequently, Granite Rock submitted the letter requesting to withdraw their regular variance since it was no longer needed as they could comply with the new limits in the updated permit. Granite Rock has also conveyed to us that this new permit was not going to deter them from still investigating maybe a more modern or more stable control device, such as a baghouse system. In summary, Granite Rock is requesting the interim variance to operate the rotary sand dryer in violation of Rule 207, while the wet scrubber manufacturer could assess and repair the unit. I would like to say that during the variance, the petitioner did curtail operations to comply with all four of the our proposed orders in the draft order. The interim variance would begin on the date of application, January 31st, 2025, and extend until April 1st, which is the date they started operating under their new permit with the updated limits. The operation of the dryer did not cause any exceedances of the state ambient air quality standards, nor did we receive any public nuisances. MBARD supports the interim variance of the operation of the rotary dryer with the proposed conditions in the updated April 24th, 2025 report. I do want to circle back to some of the discussions of earlier of that, no, there was no permit limit for PM until July 2024. This system has been permitted, I think it's been around since 1971. And as we receive permit modifications, we are always trying to improve our permits. And we did note that there was no limit and we did need to add a federally enforceable condition on the permit. So in December of 2022 and 2023, they did test for PM and they were meeting 0.06. So again, it was a surprise that the unit did not meet it. But again, we're focused on making sure the facility stays below 150. And so therefore we did have the ability to balance out throughput and an emission limit.
So if I understand right, you're missing volumetric or quantitative targets, but they curtailed production totals to keep the aggregate overall emission low, even though when you look at it in a finite level, the amount of PMs per ton of throughput was higher than was allowed, and it was, and that didn't change. You just brought the total amount of tons down to keep the overall limit per day down. And that sounds like that, is there a change now proposed to their permit that they're going to have? They're not changing the overall limits, but there's been some adjustment within which percentages can relative to tons of sand going through. When I see ton, what is that, of sand going through some of these?
I'm sorry, I don't think I understand the question.
Well, there's,
I
think I do. You have a process rate of tons per day,
right?
And then you have a plant process rate of tons per hour, and then you have the EFPM pounds per ton. I'm taking that as meaning that's a ratio of how much emission you have per ton of throughput. Am I seeing that right, or is that incorrect?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Yeah. So we had problems hitting the amount of emissions per ton of sand. It was corralled in the interim by lowering the amount of tons of sand you put in, so the aggregate met the daily limit.
As I mentioned, a wet scrubber is deemed to be best available control technology. But when you read the research, there's no limit that says it should meet this. I mean, it's used for multiple types of industries. So it'll just say it is expected to meet 95% or greater efficiency. So there's no grains per dry standard cubic feet for this technology because it varies. And because of the nature of the sand being so dry, I think that's why we're probably seeing higher variability than if you would at a asphalt batch plant.
It's interesting that you say that because one of the findings we have to make is relative to whether things are outside of the control of the conditioning. And if it's not really known how well the scrubber is going to perform with regard to emission, until you do it, you don't know. And that could support the idea that what they went through was outside their control. There's not a pencil to paper, predetermined, figure it out and set it up method. And does the petitioner agree possibly with that point of view?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Highly frustrated actually about the variability of the equipment. We've taken actions, though, I should say, working closely with the manufacturer that Mr. Carter can detail for us, that we've improved the control of the variability and the consistency of it. But in hindsight, we did not have a very good feel for how it would perform. And that was not due to the lack of maintenance or effort to keeping the equipment at a functional level.
And I just have one more question before I'll turn it over. But I'm looking at these dates. So a bunch of time has gone by. A bunch of work has already been done. Looks like the close date of the variance is already behind us. Am I saying this correctly?
Yes, yeah, so the interim variance. The reason we're having the hearing today is because we're within the 90-day window of an interim variance period. Those can only be for 90 days. The interim variance is from the date of application until April 1st when we issued the new permit. And then that's why they pulled the regular variance. But we felt it was important to have this meeting today because a regular variance requires a 30-day public notice and an interim variance just requires notice with no time limit. And so we wanted to make sure it was in the public format since we didn't have that interim variance hearing to take both these items today and have your board make a decision.
Normally, I'm really clear on timelines, but I'm going to ask again. So we are looking to grant a variance for something that's already happened.
Yes, we're doing a past action.
If we weren't to grant it, speaking, then it becomes some sort of
it would
violation
be
violation that could garner a penalty of or something.
Right, until the date of the source test, where they pass the source test.
Yeah. And the regular variance is being pulled now.
Correct.
And there's not an ask deviation going forward from today.
There's not. No. They can operate under their new permit.
I thought I was hearing.
Yes.
I wanted to clarify. Anyway, questions?
Just a couple quick, simple questions for the applicant. Under the 400-600 ton standard per day, can you still run your business?
Yes, we can.
Okay. And then for staff and also for you guys, other than the monitoring you've already determined, are you guys requesting them to do anything else? Like, do you guys have additional requirements for reporting and monitoring for them?
So one of the conditions for the interim variance is that for them to report to us the tons per day to make sure they were meeting those curtailment requirements in the past. Yeah. And so we have received those reports.
You guys okay with still doing that?
It's a permit condition, so yeah. Their new permit requires them to continue to do that.
Good. All set.
So that explains why I was only seeing the draft interim variance in the package, what I was sort of leafing around for earlier. So typically I like to go through the findings, see if we make sure we've discussed the point for the findings. So I'm going to go through them really briefly.
And Chair, do you typically go through the elements, or do you have the staff attorney do it, or I'm just... How procedurally, how do you guys like to
It's not unusual in the past 5 or 10 years that I've rewritten the findings substantially. Often what I'm trying to do is make sure that the record reflects good, solid reason that can, when the decision is reviewed, that separate from the hearing, we put some of the information that we've gleaned in the hearing into the findings in a few sentences or more.
Perfect.
I'm not saying that I'm going to do that this time, but I do want to just go over these briefly so we can make sure that, because the findings are what we are making. Finding A is that they're in violation, is or will be. The tense might be a little bit off, but I guess they are in violation even if it happened in the past until we get a variance. So the tense, I guess, is appropriate. The next one is due to conditions beyond the reasonable control of the petitioner, requiring compliance would result in either an arbitrary taking or a practical closing. And this is always a tricky one because you could have simply just shut down. And you did not have a way, as I see it, petitioner did not have a way to get compliance quickly and easily when this came up because of, it's the first time they're doing tests on this new equipment on a new permit. And the reasonable control aspect I've mentioned, which is there wasn't a way for their engineers to really know until they'd run it. It's not like some other kinds of engineering. This one's a little more seat of the pants. And I believe that we could support a finding that it was beyond their reasonable control. Finding C is an interesting one. The closing or taking would be without a corresponding benefit in reducing air contaminants. I don't know if the staff wants to speak that. If they close, they're not going to be polluting at that plant.
But maybe the company they're supplying would go to a different supplier, and maybe that supplier has higher emissions. I don't know. Different customers. I don't know.
I want to ask my colleagues for their thoughts. This is always the interesting one that we come up with. Sometimes it's quite clear. And for example, from the time you get to Chevron with vapor control systems, if they shut down, their shutdown protocols have more emission than running in a minor variance in the interim.
Mr. Chair, if I could help. So this business is a unique business. It's the glass sand that comes from that quarry is rare, even though you think sand's quite prevalent, not at this chemical composition. So our customers that receive that sand have to go to other sources to receive that sand from us because they have to keep the kilns going 24 hours a day, you know, almost 360 days a year. One of those sources that they went to when we did shut down was in Montana. And other sources are out of the state and as far as Mexico. Distance matters when you're in our industry, and the trucking differences and transportation differences are a significant part of air pollutants, in addition to greenhouse pollutants, which I recognize you folks don't regulate, but it is additional emissions. So I would think for society, the benefit of having the resource close to where you produce or where you process it is a benefit.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Mr. Chair, I'd also point out that with the revised limit in the new permit, it kind of supports the argument that there really isn't a benefit because they're able to operate under the new permit.
Good. Okay, so I'm glad we're getting something into the record on this discussion for each one of these findings. During the period the variance is in effect, this is finding E, petitioner will reduce excess emissions to the maximum extent feasible. I think we've had clear testimony on that. Any question about that from anyone? And finally, during the period the variance is in effect, petitioner will monitor or otherwise quantify emission levels from the source if requested to do so by the district and report these levels. And I think what we've heard is that any requests that were made by the district were accepted and performed by petitioner.
Yes.
Getting nods of affirmation from staff. Okay, so with that as a review of the findings, I'll ask if there's any further any discussion. So we have a draft order then that we've reviewed at least into the findings. I think we had a question about the timing of the dates, but that was addressed. I don't otherwise have problem with anything in this draft order. It could be approved by motion and unanimous vote.
Before
Chair, I've read the record, the written record presented to us previously in the agenda packet and listened to the testimony today. I am satisfied with the findings of fact and can be supported in the record. I'm satisfied with the order. So
and before I second, I think council has something to add.
I was just going to remind the chair to solicit public comment at some point during this.
Okay, so
before the vote.
Second.
Yes, second.
Okay, so now at this point, I will ask if there's any members of the public that would like to speak on this matter.
No one online.
Yes.
This is my first time here, so I'm not retired in Wabash. I've had a company, Sierra Instruments, that made PM systems. I was working with the folks at EPA to develop dichotomous samplers and air, high volume air samplers, all of the things that are used to do what is being tested. And what I want to say, and I've been to a number of these things for the benefit of my old company, just to appreciate how difficult it is, number one, to measure what it is you're offending, if you will, and how difficult it is to make a wet scrubber and a baghouse to do what they're supposed to do for the incredible variation of materials being filtered, if you will. And the quality of the material you're using for making glass has probably never been done before. And it's very difficult to tune the nozzles and the quality of the water and all of the elements to make that work, and where the nozzles are in relation to each other, if they're following the Fibonacci, you know, it goes on and on. So that it's even working is an amazing feat. And here's folks at Granite Rock don't even know that they don't know that there's magic in doing the in even accomplishing this. So my hat's off to that. It's that you're passing, and it's incredible to see that we can that this can be done. And so I'm just saying that, so congrats, and it can always get better, just like automatic cars can drive better. You know, they're scared of tunnels and scared of reflecting lights and baghouses and wet scrubbers can easily be improved. And I'm sure they'll do it. If you hold their feet to the fire, they can probably do a lot more than they're even telling you they can do. So it's all good.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on my left? I'd like to
get Mr. Chair, just to clarify, my motion would be to approve the draft order as well.
That was my understanding, but if you want to clarify this, motion maker, let's do it now.
Well, the motion was to approve the interim various. I just want to make clear that it's on the terms and conditions contained in the draft order.
It's clear to me. It's the second.
Clear to the seconder as well.
The roll call.
Okay. Director Chang. Director Gerard.
Yes.
Chair Guth. Approve unanimously.
Thank you. And thank you for your volunteering to do this important part of public service. I understand it's a real benefit to people that operate in the air district. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are now able to move on to item D on our docket, 25003. Fairwind Power Holdings Salinas River Cogeneration Facility Short-Term Variance Project.
Can you turn on your mic, please?
Mr. Sarverin Rickards?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to start by giving an oath to people who may testify, which I'm sure is going to include you too. I'm going to give it again to staff because it's in a different hearing. So, do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're going to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Claim oath.
I do.
I'll read each name individually.
Oh.
Mary Gerardo.
I do.
Cole Sarver.
I do.
Chris Rickards.
I do.
Thank you. Okay. I will let you, as petitioners, present your case.
Okay. So recently, a study was conducted on our SIM system by our SIM support contractor that we use. And it has been determined that that equipment is reaching its end of life. And more importantly, the serviceability spare parts for that is getting slim to none. So we have been systematically upgrading all of our cogen facilities this past year and a half or so. And we are to the point where we are looking to replace the PLC portion of the equipment at the Salinas River Cogen. And to do that, basically once you reinstall the new unit, you have to perform function testing. How does that control system work with all of our existing equipment? How does it tie in together? And during those function testings, we have experience sometimes where we do, if it doesn't speak to each other correctly right off the bat, we can experience excess emissions. And we've also had it where it has tripped upon firing due to communication errors in the new software. So today we are seeking a variance to relieve us from our emissions conditions, as well as the number of fires that we can have in one day in case we run into a situation where we're having to try to fire that unit multiple times to get that function testing in. And this plant provides steam and electricity to the Chevron oil field adjacent to it. So if we were to not be able to run this, we would essentially, in a roundabout way, end up curtailing our oil production and potentially causing that field to close as well.
This facility also produces energy to the grid through resource adequacy credits. But we are in a contract the next 5 years to produce those that amount of energy.
Thank you for that. A quick question or two. So I didn't see a layout this time of the equipment that was, but I've seen the equipment down there before with your pipes. In fact, I actually use pictures of it when I talk about some of the work we do here. So you got monitoring equipment that needs to be changed, and it's part of a control system. But is this monitoring equipment that is monitoring steam temperatures, flow rates? Is it a bit of everything, the electronic system with sensors for everything? Is it a narrow subset of things? Which monitoring portions are we talking
about? So this is specifically for the SIMS. It is looking at inputs for throughput and temperature and whatnot, but the main thing it is directly controlling is our NOx and CO.
Okay, and what you're replacing out, is it the control system electronics, or is it also sensors in the field?
Control system electronics.
So you're not switching out sensors?
No, we're not doing anything with the analyzer portion of the SIM system.
Any questions before we go to staff?
So if you're not able to produce electricity during this period, where do you get necessary electricity from?
At that point, we would have to purchase electricity from PG&E. But besides purchasing the electricity for our operations, that hinders us from completing our contractual agreement to sell power when needed.
Thank you.
I have a follow-up to that. So if you could, you're sending the steam down, it's coming back up, it still has enough pressure and heat that then you're expanding it in a turbine and you're making electricity. Is that what we're talking about? But if you shut the system down, you're not just shutting down your turbines, are you? All right.
In this sense, like for the Chevron cogeneration facility, yes, we would just be shutting down the turbines. And when we shut down those turbines, it then cuts the electricity that we self-produce to the oil field. And then it would cut all steam that goes to the oil field for thermal enhanced recovery.
Well, no, that's what I'm talking about. You're not just cutting down the turbines. Yes. You're curtailing your oil production.
Yes.
Right? When you curtail oil production, don't you have protocols you have to go through to stop and clean pipes before they cool down? I mean, is this something we've seen in your fields before? In other words, what I was getting at is that what I haven't heard, and maybe it's coming in the staff report, a shutdown of some of these field operations can yield more emissions than the variance overage.
Yes.
But I haven't heard discussion of that yet. Is that not at play here this time? Or if there was a shutdown, instead of getting a variance if there was a shutdown, do you or do you not have to do significant amount of
There is a lot of field work that would happen. With my prior knowledge of the downstream version of the business, I could see when you're bringing production on and offline, it could have a potential to create a large influx to the dehydration plant, which could lead to the VRU system not being able to control those influxes, which you related, yes, cooling of the pipes and then sending steam back into it could create a what they call a steam hammer. And that is a large safety concern more than anything. But yes, there is a snowball effect of other equipment that could be affected.
And so maybe it's a little different because we were talking about vapor controlled equipment last time, and that if you shut down the tanks, now I don't know if you remember this discussion we've had down there before where they have a protocol that's approved about how they shut down equipment that involves a significant amount of allowable emission. Does this ring a bell? Okay.
And the only reason we're probably not as privy to it is Chevron Pipeline and Power. It's not a separate venture, but we are separate from the oil side, so I don't personally have a lot to do with their dealings.
I'll stop there, but I know that there's a tie there that shutting down the steam, shutting down vapor control has ramifications where they had to stop and clean some equipment that by their permit and by a protocol allowed them to have allowable emissions. That last time when we were looking at a vapor control equipment where pipes were being replaced with stainless steel. And in order to do that, they had to stop their vapor control system temporarily. And we gave them the variance in part because a shutdown of the system, so it wouldn't be emitting vapor, required a shutdown protocol that had higher emissions than the variance was going to be asking for. And so you may not remember, but I do remember this.
I think the thing that's a little different now is the oil field at Chevron is at a much lower production rate today. And so they actually, as far as I know, if you want to swear Armando when we could, but I don't even think they're operating that VRU anymore because their production is so low. Their permit allows them to go up to a certain limit before they have to turn the VRU on, and they're below that limit at this time.
All right. So I'll stop there and ask for staff report.
So just a little further information, this is Chevron Power Holdings, and they operate the Salinas Cogeneration Facility. It's a 43.2 megawatt General Electric Frame 6 natural gas combustion turbine. And as was mentioned, it's used to generate electricity and steam for enhanced oil recovery. Air District rules, federal regulations, and the permit require the petitioner to operate a quality assured continuous emissions monitoring system, which is what we're calling SEMS. And this system's designed to record NOx, carbon monoxide, oxygen in the exhaust gas to demonstrate compliance with permit limits. The petitioner, as mentioned, has determined that the hardware is approaching the end of its life and new parts are difficult to source. And the hardware needs to be upgraded to ensure proper operations of the SEM system in the future. And the hardware will be upgraded during a planned outage. And when placed into operation, it's not known whether the emissions may exceed the permit limits. And I wanted to point out there is a condition number 23 on the current permit that states an exceedance of the emission limits is a violation. And therefore the petitioner is seeking relief from the permitted emission limits while the new hardware is tested. And the petitioner's request is a short-term variance from the emission limits in permit PTO-21-0007 from May 17th to August 17th. And during the term of the variance, when the turbine is operating, the emission control equipment will continue to operate as designed, and the petitioner will log the data required to demonstrate compliance. No excess emissions are expected. However, installation of the new SEMS hardware will require function testing of the equipment. With the equipment being new and untested, initial function testing of the hardware and programming could result in emission limit exceedances. Staff will review the data collected at the conclusion of the variance to determine whether there are excess emissions. Staff does not expect there to be a public nuisance or exceedance of ambient air quality standards, and staff do not oppose the variance request.
One thing I'd like to ask, I believe the original petition that I filed, I believe the date was May 1st, was when we were asking to start.
So it's funny you mentioned condition 23, because that caught my eye last night. And may not say so explicitly, but I'm wondering if there's an implicit authorization in here. When it says a SEM shall be calibrated and operated to measure the turbine exhaust discharge, and that's in their permit. If calibration is required to be done in the in real time on the system, it seems like this is an implicit authorization already of a calibration procedure. So even though we would still give them a variance if requested, if we found made all the findings, this is not deviating in any way from something that's already foreseen implicitly in the permit. It says a SEM shall be calibrated. Well, is calibration done in the field?
Yes, while the system's online, yes.
This is like to me an implicit authorization of this process in the existing permit. I don't know how you all see it. That's on item page 127, condition 23. That's what caught my eye. How do you run a calibrated system unless you calibrate it in the field? And
very true. There's several stages of the calibrations. There's what they call a CGA, a calendar, basically the CalGAS certification, and then you also have your source testing, all of which has to be done online.
So I'll look at council, and I'm not saying that this permit explicitly says that, but I'm looking at it as support for the idea of giving a variance for this operation, because it seems to implicitly say that this is done here.
I think there's enough ambiguity in how that reads that we should go forward with the variance request.
No, I wasn't saying we shouldn't do the variance request. I was saying that it the variance request is in line with what's being said in the permit. Yeah.
I have no other comment. Are you essentially, if I heard you correctly, you're saying that it's implicit support for element six is kind of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and what I haven't said yet is that this is the draft where we want to discuss these one at a time again on the findings.
Chair, I think you're looking at the Title V permit on page 127, and we actually can't give variances for federally enforceable conditions. So the variance order refers to the actual district permit, which starts on page 147.
I wasn't saying we're giving a variance to that.
Okay.
That paragraph. What I'm saying is that paragraph speaks to the process that they're going to do in a supportive fashion.
Okay. It's condition 12 on the actual district permit that's on page 149. The condition 23 that I was referring to is on page 150.
Okay, so while it is interesting,
I just wanted to clarify that
it's the same permit condition. But that discussion of that you shall calibrate certainly implies that this is an understood aspect of this operation to me.
Yes, but it doesn't have anything in that condition about the emission limits. And so that's where our concern is that those emission limits in condition two, even if they calibrated it and measuring things, they might go over the limits in the permit condition. And so that's what we're trying to give them relief from.
But now looking at page 149, this is a repetition. A SEM shall be calibrated and operate to measure. That's condition 12, page 149. It's the same language.
Yes.
So I appreciate you pointed out that it was a different spot.
Yeah, I just want to make sure you know which condition 23 I was referring to.
Make clear, I'm not saying it explicitly supports it. I'm saying that it speaks to the nature of what they're doing being understood to be part of what this permit requirement is. Okay, so I want to go through... Now I've lost my spot here. Let's quickly go through this, and then anybody chime in at any time. So the idea that the petitioner is or will be in violation, this is hypothetical at this point or not? The violation is just simply that they're not going to have the equipment running, not that they're going to be outside of emission standards?
It means we don't know at this time. Okay. As I think Cole mentioned, you don't know when after you've replaced the hardware and you turn everything back on, what exactly is going to happen.
Okay, but is it because, are they going to, when they turn everything off, and are they going to turn everything off and replace the hardware and then turn it back on?
Yes.
So they're not going to run without this hardware. They're just, so that would be a violation because it says you're going to always run the sim. So they're not asking for a variance for that. They're asking for the variance on the eventuality that it's not working right when they come up.
Correct.
So to say that petitioner is or will be in violation, it's just, I'm just trying to understand the finding. We've got to make that finding, but it's like they might be.
Yes, exactly. They will be. We don't know.
Anyway, it's just the on me. I appreciate that it's preemptive, and you know.
I mean, it sounds more like a technical question for staff as to if they turned it on, would it be reasonable to assume that they would be in violation? That can essentially get us to the first finding. That's where I think the chair is getting a little stopped up right now.
You guys expect it to be out when you start it up?
There is a high probability. We've
and it has happened in the past.
Yeah, we've done it in our San Joaquin Valley facilities. And the way I explain it is it's almost like installing the latest version of Windows on your computer. And Adobe and everything that you had installed might not speak and sync up with your new version of Windows right away.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that the district permit requires a CEM system.
Yes.
They're going to be up. They will not have a CEM system for a period of time. And that's what the variance is about, if I'm understanding correctly, because they won't have the ability to measure the discharge.
My understanding is it's being swapped out during a planned outage.
So we're planning this installation. We're going to take the unit down completely, pull out this electronic equipment, put in the newest version that we purchased. And once it goes in, we're going to fire it and start function testing to make sure that all of the logic in the electronics is speaking to each other. All the alarms are working. It's calculating fuel rates correctly and doing everything needed to maintain our permit condition compliance.
Chair, what if we said that that in the midst of the testing, if the testing were to go wrong, for example, the likelihood of violation would be very high because it's not guaranteed that it's going to work the first time around. You may need to calibrate something, and thus we were able to make the first finding.
Yeah, no, I believe the way this discussion is going is that it supports that the petitioner will be in violation.
I think so, too. It's
possible that they may not be, but... I'm going to ask this. Just due to conditions beyond the reasonable control of the petition, compliance would be arbitrary, unreasonable taking, or practical closing. I think it's even worse than that. You put in new equipment and it has to be calibrated on site with a chance of you running out of emission. You can't. This is beyond their control. You can't know in advance how to have everything set up. You have to turn it on and find out. But does that support the finding that this is almost inapplicable to the circumstance? Requiring compliance would result in an arbitrary, unreasonable taking or practical closing. The only way that you could absolutely require compliance that your system be up and running when you throw the switch is you can't. So you'd have to require compliance by keeping you shut down.
Did you mention
in perpetuity, which would be the closing or elimination? That's how I would see support for it.
I would too. And you had mentioned that there's a potential contract violation for you guys?
For the power sale, yes, yeah. For selling to the grid. We have a five-year commitment. If we have to keep these turbines down, and the way that the permit's supposed to read for the Sims is anytime that the turbine is running, it has to be continuously monitored.
I think the finding is supported.
So although there's writing in here, I think that is it the writing that dominates, or does our discussion here also support? Should something be added in, or can it just be from this discussion?
The discussion here serves as the foundational record for this order.
Very good. So if we were going to make a motion, I'll keep going through the other things. Anybody would make a motion about this draft order becoming moved to approve. Should mention that we will be lining out bolden texts that say to be discussed as part of the motion. Okay. So I believe that it's well stated at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3 at the order. The closing or taking without would be without a corresponding benefit in reducing air contaminants. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say about that?
No additions.
No issue.
Okay, petition for variance has given consideration to curtailing operations. I don't think we said it quite explicitly, but you're saying you've considered it, but you can't because you're on contract to the grid.
Yes. And I mean, just in general, besides selling to the grid, that is supplying power to the oil operation, steam to the oil operation, and curtailing that would curtail two independent practices and violate our contract for RA sale.
And I still believe that stopping the steam to the oil side has bigger issues.
They would.
Yeah, there is a snowball effect that could occur.
E, during the period the variance is in effect, the petitioner will reduce excess emissions to the maximum extent feasible. So I'm going to look to staff for that one. So are you of the mind that given that they're going to be there in real time doing the adjustments, that they are going to limit this to the maximum extent feasible?
Yes, I think their application also stated the vendor would be on site as well. So we're hopeful that there actually won't be any excess emissions. They'll turn it on and it'll work great. But we believe they will not, that they're going to do everything they can to keep those emissions down.
Thank you.
That's a lot of this element is, will you be careful? Like that's,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Move to F, during the period the variance is in effect, petitioner will monitor or otherwise quantify emission levels from the source requested to do so by the district. I think that's all being done. Questions on that?
No.
So did you say that a nuisance was not expected to concern staff as part of your report?
Correct. Okay. Yes.
We have support for that. Those, we have quite a few conditions listed in this order. And we have that table that is on page 5 of the order. I want staff to affirm that as presented in the draft order, these are the conditions that they've asked for and feel are appropriate in this circumstance.
So, yes, it's making sure they're getting relief from those conditions for the emission limits and then reporting to us the emissions once they do their hardware testing so we can confirm whether or not there are excess emissions.
And then the multiple starts condition as well as the one we discussed.
Yep. On page 6, condition 9, they can undergo more than one cold start.
Before I go to a final discussion, I'll ask if there's any member of the public here that would like to speak to this issue.
No one online.
Seeing none, I will bring it back.
Chair, can I... Cole had mentioned the term of the variance noted on the bottom of page 6, that he may want to revise that timeline. So I just wanted to revisit that.
Yes, the May 1st was our requested start date.
Okay. And then so to July 31st?
I'd have to do the math on the days, but yes, the same amount of days, just adjust that time frame.
Okay. For 90 days.
Yeah, let me just get a clarification of the dates.
May 1st and then plus 90 days. It's around the end of July 30th or 31st.
ChatGPT here real quick.
Okay.
So 90 days would be July 30th.
My observation is the spirit of the agreement that wants to be had is here's a commercial endeavor wishing to comply with the requirements and the requirement board having tasked with trying to quantify what shall and shall not pass, and no human can anticipate all those things, especially on cold starts and off normal and upgrading PLCs from 1970 to 2025. Almost incredible past, and that things are going to happen that we don't even know are going to happen. And if the language could be the spirit, is that the applicants are going to do all they can do to comply with whatever may be, and then report what was done to make that compliance, even in supplier providing you with a PLC that's supposed to talk to your NOS and CO that doesn't, and which can happen.
And no plant is designed exactly the same. You know, if they install it for Shell on the other part of the world, it probably isn't going to slide right into ours and operate exactly as it did for them.
And not allowing causes great expense to purchasing power from PG&E to keep the local oil production facility going, and not being able to provide for your obligation to the power of the grid.
Yes, sir.
So, however that's written in legal way, to consider that sort of thing.
Thank you. So do we have further discussion?
I have no other comments, just to express my appreciation for the chair for walking us through those elements. It's very helpful. Thank you.
So if we were to have a motion to approve the draft order, I would suggest that it include mention that the emboldened text that was guidance be removed, and that the days be updated from May 1st until July 30th.
Chair, I'll make that motion that the order be revised to delete the emboldened language in the various sections, and the dates read from May 1st to July 30th, 2025, and approve the variance request with the associated order.
Second.
There's a second. Okay. Why don't we do a roll call, please, Siri?
Chair Guth? Director Girard?
Yes.
Director Chang?
Yes.
Approved.
Thank you
all for your time. Yeah, thank you. D frame six, that's an 8 foot diameter. Is that an 8 foot diameter equivalent?
I'd have to look up the specs between, I have the plants all the way from San Ardo, Cominga, and all the way to the valley, and they're all a little bit different specs, but it should be what you're saying, because that's close to the same dimensions as our ones in the Kern River.
So, all right.
One of our major ones.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy, hello. Well, I was going to let you know that we, our board adopted or appointed two alternate public members, and we're fortunate enough to have them here today. So I don't know if they just wanted to say a little bit to introduce themselves. Justin?
I'm a resident of Monterey and just happy to serve. Thanks.
Thank you. Dave?
I'm a resident of Monterey as well, and my next door neighbor is Teresa Sewell, and I grew up next to Michael and Teresa. I had a company called Sierra, and I made flow meters and SEMS equipment, pipeline air sensors, and all kinds of good things in all that industry. And I've seen all of this kind of stuff evolve, and how they actually got the PM 2.5 and the guys who wrote it. What a mess we've gotten ourselves into writing some of these things and expecting us to be able to do certain things. So it's tough to do, especially it's written back before the 70s. The stuff is still around. I mean, I came for these guys at Chevron. The stuff is C:.
Yes. Yeah.
It's crazy. Can't even find Peter's out.
I'll tell them to come find you for their replacement parts.
My friend Glenn works in hydro plants. He retired as principal engineer for PG&E, and he would be down 100 feet in the ground below
yeah.
piping things. And many of those pipes were put in place over 100 years ago. So old equipment is just standard in the industry, but modern minds figure out ways to get around the old equipment.
I just have two other couple items since we haven't met since June of last year. The hearing board worked on a regulation or updating our regulation. I just wanted to let you know that the board adopted the regulation on June 19th, 2024. And then we had an abatement order that the hearing board issued back in October 20. Oh, sure.
Regulation. So last year we went over, well, we had a discussion, an open discussion about the regulations. They were different. Our old ones were rather slenderized. And we brought sort of ourselves up. But one thing I can't recall, and given the lack of quorums, do we have, and Reed, I don't know if we'd even be allowed to, is there an emergency authorization for some way for this board to take action in the absence of a quorum?
Yes, there's emergency variances, and the chair has actually specific authority in the governing statutes to issue those in that case, and that the chair is unavailable. The vice chair has that.
And then it comes back to the board at some...
Ostensibly, right? That's the intended okay. process.
So these weren't emergency. We've had a couple of canceled meetings. And I was just wondering, like, what if it had been... So we did indeed have that in there. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so back in October 2023, the hearing board issued an abatement order for a gas station operator located in Marina. And they did not comply with that abatement order. And so MBARD sought our own legal counsel to prosecute this person. And on June 7th, 2024, our counsel filed the case with the Monterey County Superior Court. And then in September 2024, we got a final judgment and payment was made to us in the amount of $38,500. And I just want to remind you that abatement order was for $6,141. So we ended up getting quite a bit more money after the fact. However, in November 2024, the gas station canopy collapsed, which rendered the gas station inoperable. And so since that time, one of our inspectors drove by there last month and they still had not replaced or repaired the canopy. It was still falling down on the ground. So we did let them know if they, once they go in and change out those damaged dispensers, they need to modify their permit, but we have heard nothing from the gas station owner. So that's how that one ended. You're welcome.
That's a word. Unless there's any final words, I will adjourn. Okay, I'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
How long have you been doing?